Hello and welcome to Anime Journey to the West. I'm Chloe Boyd and here are my friends.
Hello, I'm Zeb Berryman. My pronouns are he and him.
Hi, I'm Lydia Lewis. My pronouns are they, them.
Hi, I'm Liz. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm the bodacious badass.
You are a badass.
I'm basically Mo Sizzlak from the early seasons of Simpsons.
Nice.
And fun fact, that's also what my cat Mo is named after.
Nice.
So we're joined by two co-hosts today. They're guests, Sophie and Dunan. I'm babysitting them because they have separation anxiety. So if anybody hears any barking, that's just our lovely co-hosts adding to the conversation.
Exactly. It's totally... It's awesome. A feature, not a bug.
We'll also stop them from getting eaten by dragon steeds.
Hopefully. Okay, what do dragon steeds eat? Do they eat just grass? Because, like...
We discussed this. They eat people.
Can you imagine just finding one at night, jaw unhinged, swallowing somebody? You know, horses have more teeth than they have brain in their head?
Wild.
They have, like, teeth that go all the way back into their skulls. Like, disgustingly back. It is... They are nightmarish.
I did not need to know that, but now I do.
Well, you live in the Yukon. You have to fear moose, not horses.
I mean, there are people who have horses in the Yukon.
Oh, so you're just, like, double whammied. You have all the eldritch creatures of the woods.
Moose aren't actually a thing to fear. They're, like, very skittish and mostly just run away.
Oh. What about deer and bears?
Deer are also skittish. There are definitely types of bears that are more afraid of you than you are of them. But there are also types of bears that will just fucking kill you.
What about wolves? So you guys got wolves or is that a no-go?
I think we've got wolves. I've never really seen them that much, though. You're way more likely to see foxes than wolves.
Ooh.
I love foxes.
Yeah, foxes are cool.
I want one.
Right, so, anime that we've watched recently,
I've been loving Singular Point.
Oh yeah, I think I've heard of that one.
So, it's a Godzilla anime.
Oh, right, right.
It's really good. I'm up to episode 7. I love the main female character. Me and my boyfriend have been watching it, and he told me he watched it before I did. He told me, he's like, the main female character reminds me of you. And I'm like, oh, you make me blush.
I saw the beginning of the first episode before I got called away for something. And I was not expecting the first episode to be a mystery.
It's so interesting what they do, because I think they do a lot of really interesting world building with what having a kaiju suddenly appear would, like, what would it cause in reality, and I think that's really interesting. And I love characters. I do think, cause I'm up to episode 7, I do think the techno babble is a little strong, but
I've heard that.
Yeah, like, I'm like, sometimes I'm like, hold on, I have to pause and, like, read the subtitle, because I'm listening it to English dub, but I also have the subtitles on, and I'm like, okay, what just happened? Okay, I kind of get it, okay. Then I
Netflix. Well, Netflix subtitles are also sometimes pretty unhelpful, because they only have one set of subtitles, and usually they don't necessarily... They aren't necessarily the same as what's actually being said in the dub.
Yeah, it's honestly finding someone that is good at giving good subtitles. It costs a good bit of money because you want someone to do it well, and because it's an important service, and because you have to convey either for someone that cannot hear or does not have the ability to process what is being said audibly at the time.
Yeah.
You have to convey it well, and technically, at least in the US, streaming services do not have to have subtitles. It's
right.
Only for broadcasting, for traditional TV, just the way the law was written. And a lot of laws are not cut up to new media.
Right.
So Netflix more or less has the subtitles as like a favor. I hate wording it like that because disability rights and accessibility shouldn't be a favor, but to a major company it is. And they do it just so they can get more listeners or watchers to their service. So it's a little less than grand.
Yeah, yeah. And also, for the animes, they just are like, we're not going to bother having a second set.
And there's also, I think, the issue of translation, because like what you can translate written down on a screen is probably a lot different than what you can match with mouth flaps and still keep with the original intent. So, anything else? And is anybody watching or listening to anything else? Sorry about that.
So, no, the tangent was good, I think. So what I've been watching, predictably, is Gundam Hathaway.
Yes, I remember how Henry and I were talking with you, and when I mentioned, oh yeah, Gundam Hathaway was out, like, sorry, conversation's over, I'm leaving.
Yeah, Gundam Hathaway is real good. It's interesting because it's based off of a novel, Hathaway's Flash, that was written by Tomino, the original writer of Gundam. It's interesting because Gundam is very traditionally focused on like youth, on like themes of youth and how children respond to war and stuff. This is one of the only ones that isn't like that. It's a adult focused political thriller. None of the characters are kids. They're all adults. I would say, going into it that, it's probably harder to understand the plot if you haven't watched a whole bunch of other Universal Century stuff. It'll be an entertaining enough thing for you, but I will say that that they expect you to already know these characters and their motivations and stuff. Hathaway is a character from Char's Counterattack. He's Bright Noah's son. He was like a very unpopular character in that movie. The novel made him popular again, and this is doing work with that as well. And in this, he's become like this interesting character because he looks a lot like Amuro, the hero of the old series. He's got more like the ideology of Char, but like maybe a little bit more moderated. It's an interesting series. I'll say that it's written by Tomino, so the gender politics aren't great. The main female character, Gigi and Elusia, because this is also Tomino in a good way, which is that it still has Tomino names, but Gigi is kind of like thrust into this weird romantic triangle that doesn't really need to exist, in my opinion. But yeah, there are some other female characters who are a bit better. And to be fair, she at least has like really cool fashion and stuff. I think it's a really cool anime, and I really like that it's a Gundam movie that's just like very directly into like the ideologies and stuff going on in Gundam. I like it a lot. Oh, also the robots are cool.
I haven't been watching any anime, but I have been playing a game. When I mentioned you're going to be like, Cole, you're 20 years late to the party, but I have been playing Halo Combat Evolved for the first time in my life.
Cole, you're 20 years late to the party.
Anyway, I can understand the hype behind this game, and it is really good.
Yeah, I'm not 20 years behind, but I've been joining you on that adventure. It's been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, I'm it's a bit nostalgic, but it is interesting to see someone playing a game from my, like, childhood for the first time. I say childhood, I mean teenage. I was a teenager.
Teenagerhood.
I also haven't been watching really any anime, although for a different reason. That reason being that one of my roommates has developed an obsession isn't the right word, but it's starting to become the right word with a YouTuber who plays The Sims.
Oh.
So I've been watching a lot of Sims YouTube instead of actually watching anime. We did clean out our bookshelves recently and found apparently my roommate has the entire Lone Wolf and Cub thing.
Oh, cool.
The entire, yeah, so I've been thinking, I haven't started reading that yet, but I'm going to be reading that. Trying to catch up on some other stuff first, though. Some art editing.
Yeah.
I say catch up as if I'm actually behind, but I feel like I'm behind, even though I'm not.
Yeah, so I think we've all said our anime stuff, or our Halo Combat Evolved stuff, as it were. So I'm going to get started on the episodes. So we start with Romeo and Juliet at episode 21. The Covenant, the Goddess's Embrace. So Juliet wakes up after her encounter to see Ophelia gone. But as her chest glows, she asks her mother and father's grave if she must be a sacrificial lamb. In the streets of Neo Verona, Francisco, Conrad, and Kirio reflect on how deep the city's wounds are. They decide to save the people in their hour of need. Conrad asks what misfortune has befallen the place. We cut to Mercutio and his men. They are preparing themselves, and he is having a mental breakdown. He says, "I want power, is that?" But then cuts himself off as he sees people staring. He takes on the authority as he tells his doubtful-looking men that they must put the rabble to the torch and orders them to follow him. Francisco and Kirio try to organize a relief effort, but they see a fire a ways away. Francisco notes that if the wind picks up, the Inferno's hunger will overtake them. Francisco tells Kirio to take some men to put it out.
This is a really great scene. I think it shows the average person in New Verona and how they're being affected by all this chaos going on. I also think this shows some of the side characters. I don't want to call some of the characters with Juliet's Rebellion side characters, but just because of how the anime's paced, they sometimes feel like side characters.
Yeah.
I also really appreciate getting to see how these characters react when there is this sort of natural disaster and crisis going on. It really shows a very human side of them, apart from the whole rebellion thing.
Yeah. So, Romeo sees the fire from above, and Prince Montague enters with a pretty great evil laugh. He looks Fero with sadistic glee. "Burn on! Burn it to ashes! Burn, my love! Burn! Earn the vermin in their own rebellious tallow!" Romeo realizes that the fire is his father's doing. Prince Montague says, "Better they rise up in smoke than in rebellion. Is it not the owner's right to butcher his cattle as he sees fit?"
Romeo, can I say this next part?
Sure.
So then Romeo says, "They are not yours to butcher."
Yeah, and he calls him a villain. Montague keeps grinning and says, "No villain I, but prince." As Romeo continues to confront him, he says, "I'll burn your little whore next."
He says this line is so... It almost made me chuckle just because, "I'll burn your little whore next."
It is a very funny line reading.
It is. And it's very in character because, like, Montague is watching his power fall apart. Montague is breaking down just as much as Mercutio.
Yeah.
Also, you missed the best line from Romeo.
What?
You are neither prince nor man.
So, Romeo is, Romeo is filled with rage and tells him, you are not my father, and leaves. Prince Montague continues to watch the flame and says, burn with your city, you damned Capulet shade! So he has fully reached the point where he just associates the city itself with the Capulets and wants to burn it down too. So Juliet sees the city burn and sees it as Ophelia's words coming true, which I'm pretty sure is actually just a coincidence. I think that the island falling from the sky and killing everything is like a legitimate thing to worry about, but I also don't think that like the tree dying caused Prince Montague to burn everything.
But Prince Montague burning everything could cause the city to fall from the sky.
Yeah. So Tybalt arrives on his dragon seat and purrs. What a splendid sight. A blaze worthy of the morrow and coup. A funeral pyre for Montague's many sins, showing that he is very much like his father. In the center, the Capulet crew works to help people. Cordelia asks Benvolio for more bandages, and he runs off. Conrad worries that they'll run out of food. They see the fire spreading, and Francisco realizes that no fire could spread that fast unassisted. We see the dragon seeds led by Mercutio using fire arrows, only to be interrupted by Romeo. Romeo asks if the better angels of his nature have taken flight, and Mercutio claims it's for Neo Verona's own good. When Romeo protests, Mercutio is enraged and says that if Romeo means to defy his father, he will give him a prodigal son's reward. Which I assume means that he's going to give him a lot more sheep than the son who remained there loyally. But anyways...
Yeah.
Romeo does a dive and knocks Mercutio from his steed and says, "Listen to me. My father has been humbled, laid low by his own evil designs." When Mercutio is enraged and calls him an ungrateful whelp, he slaps him. "If you ever loved your father, recognize my father for the monster he's become." Mercutio begins to cry. He pushes Romeo off. "Damn you! Damn you and all your lies! You had it all and you threw it away! You had everything." And he runs away.
Damn, Romeo. Damn.
Yeah.
Just like bringing up Titus again.
I don't even think Romeo knows that Montague killed Titus.
He doesn't, and that's what makes it hit so hard.
Yeah. So, Antonio searches for Juliet, and we see she's leading a group of people to safety, including an old lady she has riding on her back. The people thank her, still calling her the Red Whirlwind. A little boy says he wants to be like her when he grows up. A little girl falls over, and part of the city collapses over where she is. At the last moment, Romeo saves her.
Can I just say this? I love in an anime, you can tell, like, the second, like, basically background character that has a voice line, you can tell when it's, like, a main voice actor. And the little kids, they have the biggest, this is an adult woman trying to sound like a child. And you can tell, yeah. And I love it. It's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
Oh,
boy, I want to be, I want to grow up to be a hero like you. Oh boy, oh boy.
The funniest one of these that I ever saw was actually in the original Fullmetal Alchemist dub, where there's this little kid who the voice actor in this case wasn't a woman, it was a guy, and he didn't bother. And there's like this like small child who sounds like a 30-year-old smoker.
Can you imagine just this little kid walking up to you and being like, "Hey,
so
hey, I want to be like you when I grow up."
So, Prosy D voice. So Prosy D, he's from YouTube. He's a professional voice actor. He also does like a lot of funny anime videos and food reviews and just chit chatting with friends and playing games, whatever. He voiced a character in a game recently. I was playing The Unavowed, and I'm like, I just know it's Prosy D. I can't get it. I'm like, this is just Prosy D. Like, I know you're supposed to be, like, a genie, but I just hear you doing your goofy, funny old man voice, and I can't take this seriously whatsoever. This is great acting. No, it's well acted. I'm just like, I know you from other stuff, and I just see you just doing a skit.
That's like, I've been listening to Behind the Bastards, and they have Paul F. Tompkins on a few times, and all I hear is Mr. Peanut Butter.
Oh my god.
From BoJack Horseman.
Like, I remember he used to, like, do the Thrilling Adventure Hour, and I'm just like, why are you not drinking right now and having fun with your gorgeous wife while you solve mysteries? This is not right.
Nice.
So, as Juliet thanks him, Romeo tells her he has no father and that the city belongs to its citizens, not to him. They hug and he says, "Soon I must perform the bitterest task a son could undertake. But come the dawn, we are free." As he runs as she cries, thinking, "That dawn will never break."
I also wanted to say that when I first saw the scenes with Romeo on the dragon steed, I 100% thought it was CLO at first, and I was like, what?
No, CLO is not coming back, I think. He's dead. He went to the racing dimension.
He's with the horse that he's not dead. He's happy with the horse that he probably has knocked up at this point.
Yeah, he's out in the wild hunting bandits and devouring them.
Well, he's not devouring as many because he probably has to feed them to his kids at this point.
It's fine. He's still teaching them how to hunt.
Yeah.
So how do you think baby dragon seeds eat? Do the parent dragon seeds need to do up the bandage before puking it up to the babies? Oh god, what did I just say?
No, they probably just smash them with their hooves.
I think that baby horses' teeth develop pretty fast.
They do, and like, oh god. Horses are kind of abominations when you think about it.
They are. But also, it's the dragon steed has some specific issues in that the young aren't able to unhinge their jaws.
Oh, they are. Have you seen one?
Not far enough to swallow a grown man yet.
So, there is smoke all throughout the city. Everyone is dirty and traumatized. Antonio tells Juliet that the others are safe. They are found by William and Amelia. Amelia has a very nice hat. William complains that their carriage broke down and that they had to walk. William says it's hard to deal with disasters conjoined and notes how ridiculous an earthquake followed immediately by a fire is.
Okay, but he doesn't just acknowledge how ridiculous it is. He adds sound effects.
He does add sound effects.
And he's like, Act 1, an earthquake. Ah! And then Act 2, a fire. Oh.
Ah, William.
I love William.
Amelia says that for a while she feared an end to Neo Verona. Juliet thinks about what Ophelia said. Amelia asks her what's wrong, and she says she's fine. And William criticizes her acting. What were you saying, Elizabeth?
As he should.
She asks him if he was writing a story where the heroine had to sacrifice herself to save the world, what that heroine would do. He says, impossible to say. Far be it from me to subject my heroine to that. Though every life must eventually dim to an ember until that final spark went ebon to her own self. To her own self would e'er remain true. That is a heroine worthy of my quill. Juliet is very clearly touched, but Amelia does not read subtext and asks what he is even talking about. William smiles, and both Juliet and Amelia laugh. Amelia has, like, a very weird giggle. So, Conrad is angry that Montague would burn his own city, and Francisco says that the time for waiting is over. He adds that since Montague killed the Lord Speaker, even the nobles will want to be rid of him now. They prepare to bring him down. So, Cordelia is brushing Juliet's hair like in the early episodes. Juliet says it feels like forever since she's done that. Cordelia says in a isn't this funny kind of way that Bergoglio asked her to marry him after everything has died down. Juliet is excited and asks what Cordelia said in response, and Cordelia is like, I said nothing at all. Juliet says that he deserves a proper reply and that this is the best news she could have given her.
I can only imagine Benvolio freaking out after she says nothing at all.
Yeah.
Also, I kind of wish we saw more of the romance between Cordelia and Benvolio, because I think they're two very interesting characters. I would say they're both the most mature characters of the cast.
Yeah.
And I would have loved to see how their romance would have differed from Romeo and Juliet's.
Yeah.
I think that my biggest criticism of the series as a whole is just that I want more of it. And what I mean by that is I wish there was more time to develop a lot of the side stuff.
I feel like Cordelia and Benvolio and Jedro kind of got done dirty by being separated from the rest of the cast.
Yeah. Definitely.
Because I feel their romance is a little bit underdeveloped, it's true, but also it feels like there were other relationships that both characters had that kind of disappeared from the show. Cordelia's are a little bit more developed because she's with the rest of the Capulets for a little bit longer. But I kind of feel like I kind of would have liked a little bit more of Kirio having to be Benvolio's gruff dad, for example.
I just want, like, 5 more episodes.
Yeah.
I think for me it would be more like two more, because I'm also wondering, wait a minute, is the thing with Aeschylus, like, getting enough proper build-up? I'm worried, like, you know, this could be something where, you know, like, there isn't enough time for Aeschylus. You know, like, the Aeschylus finale, so it's obviously building too, you know?
Yeah.
So, Cordelia still thinks Juliet is overreacting to this whole thing, but Juliet hugs her and says, I wish you happiness. Oh, how I do. And Cordelia smiles and returns the hug. In front of the remains to a temple to the goddess, Juliet thinks, what is my destiny? Was I destined to survive the slaughter that claimed the rest of my family? My deeds as the Red Whirlwind, defender of Neo-Verona's poor, were they preordained? And now, was it all just prologue for my dying for Aeschylus? She opens her eyes and sees irises blooming in the cracks of the tiling. She decides they must have bloomed to bless Benvolio and Cordelia's wedding, and she thinks, I've known such precious people. Priceless, every one of them. At this point, we see a montage of all her friends. I didn't have time to write this down, but I do want to say that everybody else gets like this moment where they're being like, where we see like see them being nice and stuff, and then for Conrad, we only see scenes of him being grumpy and yelling, and it's really funny.
It is.
Especially because there are moments in the show where he's not like that. They could have shown like the parts where he's like super proud and has like tears in his eyes and stuff, but no, they were just like, these are the parts where he was like he was a real grouchy dick. But anyways. So we see a montage of all our friends, kind and loving, lighthearted and merry, how they have nurtured me. Bled for me. I'm alive because you set your hearts to it. We start to see Romeo, and you, Romeo. There is no world without you, and no you without the world. If I must die in order for you to live, I welcome it. So at the theater, Cordelia is in a lovely wedding dress with irises in her hair. Amelia says that even though they had to use one of William's costumes, she still looks beautiful.
Swear to God, Neo Verona loves loves irises more than the Dutch love tulips.
They really do.
Like, it's always, I understand that irises are important, but like, it's always either a rose or an iris. There are no other flowers that exist.
No, they exist. They're just showered on Francisco as flower petals from adoring fans.
Yeah.
Way back in, like, what was that, the 5th or 6th episode?
No,
a long
real
time
reason,
ago.
The real reason why Neo Verona is dying is not because of Aeschylus's will. It's because there's no crop rotation or biodiversity.
They have three plants. They're potatoes, roses, and irises.
So, Juliet gives her a bouquet of irises, and Cordelia cries tears of joy, remembering when Juliet couldn't even sew a button onto a doublet. Juliet tells her to save some tears for a wedding. Cordelia agrees and says the bouquet is perfect. We cut to the wedding, where William is in charge of the proceedings and shows he absolutely can't turn it off as he mutters, small house. He introduces the bride and groom. Benvolio is wearing a very fancy outfit with a nice hat. I don't know if it's era appropriate wedding costume or just something they made up. The two look at each other, eyes shining, and then kiss. We get a shot of everyone in the Capulet crew that we've spent so much time with, smiling and clapping. Antonio tells Juliet that if she feels like crying, it's all right. But she says she wants them to see her smiling on this day. So, after the wedding, Cordelia gives Juliet the bouquet and tells her to get some use out of it with Romeo. Juliet tears up and says that she might not be able to, and says, "My hands are so very small. That much happiness would it just go tumbling from my grasp." Cordelia calls her a silly duck and says that there's no limit on how much happiness a person can feel. It begins to snow. Cordelia says, "When it's melted away and flowers bloom throughout the city, I hope everyone is as happy as I am today." We get pretty footage of snow falling as Juliet thinks, "Romeo, for the sake of all who call Neo Verona home, and those few I cradle in my heart, once the battle is won, to Aeschylus I must go. Both here and in the hereafter, I swore I'd cling to you for all eternity. Forgive me for breaking my promise, but I'll save the world knowing it's left in your gentle hands. To have known you, to have loved you, that is my happiness, Romeo." So the screen kind of gets weird and blurry at this point, but we see Romeo on his dragon steed wearing a hood.
Trying to be cool. I think he's following his older brother's example, you know, as little brothers tend to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that dragon seed's thinking about how Romeo is probably going to taste delicious?
The dragon steeds don't eat their owners. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're guard steeds. Come on, Coley. They eat fair all their... enough.
They eat their enemies.
So I have a question involving dragon steeds.
What?
You think that it's a form of execution to feed up prisoners of dragon steeds?
Probably not.
I mean, the actual execution involving dragon steeds is probably like the execution that we had in ancient times, where you tie two dragon steeds to someone and then send them both in opposite directions to tear someone apart.
Ooh, drawn and quartered.
Yeah. Anyway, so on that very disturbing note, the episode preview is the blood within him, loathsome to the thought, the villain unrepentant to the last. The winds of fate have drawn their mainsail taut. Unsheath your sword, and lo, the die is cast. So, what do we think of the episode?
It was really good. I really liked most of it.
Yep.
I really wish we had more time to see the romance between Benvolio and Cordelia, but we already talked about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked it. I think it was a really good build-up episode. It, like, helped put a lot of the characters' feelings into where they need to be. We got to see a little bit more of Mercutio's breakdown and what specifically motivates him in his hatred of Romeo. Yeah.
I think it was really fun, and I'm sorry if I'm a little quiet on this episode, just because I really want to talk about the next one, because I feel like a lot of things really kick off the next one.
Yeah.
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 These two episodes are great and really need to be talked about together.
Romeo and Juliet, episode 22, Curse, Raging Fury. So we get the scene at the end of the last episode, but it continues as Romeo thinks about his relationship with his father. "Nothing has ever been built with a sword in hand," Regardless, I will do what I must for Juliet. And then we go into the theme song. So as the snow falls, Juliet is greeted by Tybalt, who says that he will be the one to kill Prince Montague, and that he has earned the right. Juliet tells him that nothing good comes of hatred, and that though he will destroy his enemies, he will eventually destroy himself. She tells him about how she plans to sacrifice herself to Aeschylus. Tybalt says that generation by generation, the daughters of Capulet have been bound to Aeschylus. She reveals a mark she has on her chest, and that because of it, she can revive Aeschylus and save the world. She says she doesn't know why she told him this, and not the others. Perhaps because he's Bromio's brother and her cousin, and asks if he would take care of Romeo for her. He asks if she's sure this is the only way. She says it is, thanks him for all he has done, and leaves. He calls her name, and she turns back and smiles before walking away. The screen gets blurry again. Tybalt wonders if any other fate can be made. So the people huddle together outside and in the monastery. Portia looks over them and then hears a noise and finds Romeo waiting in the courtyard. He asks for her forgiveness because he's going to the castle to kill his father. The reign of Montague will end by my hand. As he walks away, she says, "Forgive me, Romeo, for what we have done to you, both you and Juliet. No child should pay so greatly for the sins of their fathers." He stoically says he must go. She asks him to promise he won't destroy everything he's fighting for. So, the next day, Juliet puts on some extremely cool red armor.
It does look particularly baller.
Yeah.
It's like the best Fire Emblem armor.
It really is.
She looks like Sully from Fire Emblem Awakening, and I'm living for it. Also, no boob armor. I love it. I hate the armor that looks like it's like a sports. I hate it. Yeah. Okay. It makes it worse because you don't want armor that is basically a sports bra, because if it cracks or gets damaged, it will destroy major blood vessels.
Also, you don't want to like just paint a like giant target for where your enemy can stab you.
Exactly. And also, you don't need breasts to have a female character. It just annoys me so much. It's like, you don't need breasts to have a female character. You don't need to constantly be like, hey, this character has breasts to remind them that they're female. It's lazy visuals. It's kind of cis-sex. It's very cis-centric.
Yeah.
And also, it's usually done grossly as well. And it just looks dumb. It looks dumb, and I just have to say it. Like, I typically tend to give a pass on the boob armor, because usually that's the only time you get something other than a metal bikini. But I hate it. It's so fucking stupid. It upsets me on multiple levels.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we do not have it here.
Yeah. Me too.
So, Cordelia says that when all this is over, she could walk the city as Juliet, hand in hand with Romeo. Amelia demands that she also starred William's next play as a dashing hero to her heroine, because she's still figuring some stuff out. Cordelia says that Juliet's unlikely to want to dress as a boy after all this time. When Amelia continues to argue, Cordelia says that if she keeps casting Juliet, she'll never meet a nice man. Shut up, Cordelia.
Yeah, Cordelia, it's not gay to, like, constantly want my assigned female at birth friend to be my love interest. It's not gay to have the possibly genderqueer Juliet play my love interest all the time.
I kind of think that Amelia is just canonically bi at this point.
Oh, basically, she's just like, I like you if you are hot and or have money. Those are my requisites. prerequisites.
Another funny thing with this whole show is that I kind of feel like Benvolio's crush on Romeo just has to be canon at this point. Because that first scene, that one scene that we had together that first made us think that they were, implied that he was already in love with someone and had him like blushing and stuff and giving a non-answer when Romeo asked if he'd been in love. And then that never comes up again, and his main romance is with Cordelia, which means that Romeo really is the only candidate. Anyways, Antonio enters and tells Juliet it's time. She picks up her sword as the epic music plays. Cordelia looks worried, and Amelia puts her hand on her shoulder. Juliet promises they will arrest Montague and restore the land to its people. Tonight, the iris blooms again! They fly to the castle as Conrad thinks, "My Lady Juliet, almost 14 years ago, I fled this castle. You and Cordelia nestled in my arms. I am honored to finally return at your side." We get a very cool shot of the castle as they approach. So a guard tells Tubo they've been ordered to execute all deserters on the spot. He tells him he'll do no such thing and that everyone is free to abandon his post. He says that as soon as Montague started the fire, his reign was finished. We see several nobles evacuating. We see a now pretty broken-looking Mercutio wandering the halls. He says to himself that if he goes to the wilderness, they'll kill him. But if he returns to Montague, he'll also kill him.
So he is in a very odd place at this point because he was the one that, under Montague's orders, had everything burnt down. And I think he alienated himself so much from the other nobility, not only for how he became Montague's adopted son, but also to his like steadfast loyalty to Montague in order to get power. He is basically adrift because now the power is falling underneath Montague's feet and therefore his. And he is like having a nervous breakdown. And yeah. I'm like, dude, if I were you, I'd cut your hair, change your clothes, pretend to be another noble or something, and get the fuck out.
Yeah.
I am like, if I was him, I would have been ransacking Montague's room, finding any jewel or gold I could to try and pocket it and try and get out of there.
Yeah, well, we'll see what he does.
Oh, yeah, we will. Yeah, we will.
He says, "Oh, father, where to go?" We see a guard sneaking around who's fairly obviously Tybalt. So Prince Montague sits on his throne, fairly casually holding a sword. "Daughter of Capulet, I have done 1,000 dreadful things to you and yours. Yet no deed do I repent more than not finding my way to your murder those many years ago." His grip on his sword tightens. The door opens and Tybalt confronts him. "There was a time I cursed my life, wondering what task I'd been put on this earth to perform. But in time, I found my answer. I was born to put an end to you once and for all." Montague asks his name, and Tybalt tells him Tybalt Volume de Capulet. Montague smiles almost nostalgically. This is a thing that we could put in the fan cam, and says he remembers a woman by that name. Tybalt says he's her son. Montague looks surprised. Tybalt says, "Yet it is your blood that rages in my veins." So there's a standoff at the bridge between the Capulet forces and Tubal's men. Juliet steps her dragon steed forward, saying, "Now hear the words of Juliet Fimanta Ars de Capulet." She tells them to open the gate and no harm will come to any of them, and that it is their fervent hope reach Montague without without the spilling of blood. We will rebuild Neo Verona and find a way together to sheathe our warlike swords forevermore. Cast open the gates, sir, and find your place in Neo Verona's shining future. Tubal lowers his head, steps forward, and bows, welcoming her to Neo Verona. We see Conrad and a few other of the minor Fire Emblem characters look pretty shocked that this actually worked.
It is a little surprising that it works.
Yeah.
Considering everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It is, though, very funny that that all of the background characters are just like, oh, wow, I can't believe that actually worked. We were just humoring her.
They are visually, and like the way the sword falls just to dead silence, like a pin dropping, I think it's wonderful. It's dramatic, but also you see everybody's face like, oh my god, is this actually happening?
Yeah.
Is this for real?
Montague reflects that he had heard Lady Volumia had died and says that it's remarkable to think of all the Capulet-lit blood he spilt. And then to see the results of their blood mingling, and laughs. Tybalt charges, and after a clash of swords, we see that Tybalt has one of his swords to the side of Montague's head. He tells Montague to take him to Aeschylus and show him what must be done to prevent Juliet from becoming its seed. As he asks why Aeschylus demands Juliet's life, Montague looks shocked. Her life? The Capulet girl? He growls like a cornered animal as Tybalt threatens him. The door opens a second time as Romeo enters. He charges with his sword. Tybalt blocks Romeo and tells him to stay back. Romeo says, I will be the one to end the reign of Prince Montague. Withdraw, sir! Montague repeats. Aeschylus is kept alive by the blood of Capulets. All of this is Aeschylus's will! The Capulet. Sorry.
Expect you to yell it like he did, and I was just very impressed. Also, the anime eye thing of like someone going insane and their eyes becoming like 80% of their face, but the iris and pupil shrinking. This is the smallest I've ever seen an eye and pupil shrink in an anime when they do the scary face thing. Because if it was any smaller, it would be like a pinprick for what you see like Simpsons do for pupils. It is insane.
The only time I've ever seen characters with smaller pupils, I think our characters who are in an anime, I think our characters who are actually supposed to be blind.
Like, it is astounding how big. I cannot emphasize enough how freaky his face looks in this scene, and good on the animators for portraying it so well.
Yeah.
It's so very good how well it's portrayed.
Yeah. So the Capulets then come through the door. Montague glares at Juliet with total rage and hate. It was you all the time. You held the missing key to everything. Juliet drops her sword in front of her and says, "The time for swords has passed. 14 years ago, you butchered my entire family. With this, I have made my peace. Understand that I have no intention of taking your life, nor desire for revenge, nor any taste for the politics of resurrecting my house. The fate of the city, Lord Montague, will be placed in the hands of its citizens." And then she banishes him and says, "Now withdraw." Montague says, "I once believed that with enough power, I could change the course of destiny itself." He raises his sword, a look of rage on his face, but then stabs it into the floor. A man's glory emanates like a pebble in a pond. It ripples outward, then vanishes As if it had never existed. He gasps, and we see the character who finally killed him by stabbing him through the back.
And it is motherfucking Tybalt.
Nope. It is Mercutio.
Oh, wait. What? I remember it being Tybalt.
No, it's Mercutio.
Huh.
And I'm just gonna say, I told you all that you'd never guess what happened to Prince Montague several episodes ago.
Yeah, he dies.
I guess you could guess he would die, but I don't think you could guess that the character who would kill him was fucking Mercutio.
I did not expect this from Mercutio's story arc. I expected, like, he would somehow turn into an asshole, learn not to be an asshole, and somehow end up with Lady Helene. Lady Hermione, just because I thought that's how it was gonna go, just because, you know, pair the spares trope. The fact that he is so out of it, he doesn't even know what the fuck read the room means, because he stabs Montague perfectly straight in the back, right in the middle of the Montague family symbol, and you just see Montague bleed out. It is phenomenal. This is a great of course. It's dramatic, it's indulgent, maybe a bit cliche, but the anime does it so wonderfully, you can't complain.
Yeah.
It's also, arguably, Mercutio is the one who's been hurt the most by him the most recently.
Yeah. So, he says that Montague did this to himself. He cackles nervously. Montague says, Capulet, Titus, Monia, they all, and then collapses into Juliet and Romeo's arms. Mercutio laughs that he did it, and it's finally over because he killed Prince Montague. Tybalt glares and tells him to get out. Mercutio asks why he should go. He's the hero who vanquished the evil prince, and that everyone wanted him dead. Tybalt says, "Your life is not worth the effort it would take to end it." And Mercutio wanders off laughing.
Mercutio needs some help.
Mercutio needs therapy. So what's the chances Mercutio becomes the new big bad?
Zero.
I don't know. I think Mercutio is just gonna straight up die from, like, insane. Like, and I'm when I say insane, I don't mean like a genuine mental illness. I mean genuine, like, fictional, like, erratic behavior.
I'm just going to say that, as far as I remember, this is the last time we ever see Mercutio.
So my theory is, you know, like how when an animal's sick in the wild, it, like, hides to die? I think he's going to have an insanity-induced heart attack in, like, the hallway or one of the rooms somewhere, and he just dies, and nobody cares.
I mean, I think the whole point of this is that this is, like, the ending for his character. Like,
You can't recover from this.
Yeah, you can't recover from this. He basically put everything into this whole thing with Prince Montague. And then at the last moment, he realized how completely fucked over he'd been by Prince Montague, and kills him, and then just wanders off into the wilderness.
To die. Just like an animal in the wild. I'm just gonna go somewhere and die.
Yeah. So Prince Montague says, "No one, not once, has ever truly loved me." Juliet asks if he was trying to make people love him, and he replies, "I will not have your pity. Your fear is all I desire. Fear above all." Go ahead, Elizabeth.
I'm just going to say, I kind of appreciate Montague going, like, "No, don't woobify me. Do not paint. I am just an asshole. Do not give me any depth. I refuse."
Like, I get why the show has to have the characters, like, express some level of sympathy for him, since for the themes to work, and we can have, like, a longer discussion at the end of the episode about whether that what that says about the themes of the show and all that sort of thing. But I do like the fact that he's just, like, extremely defiant to that. The
fact that I want to be like, Montague, you were so wrong. Romeo loved you up until a point, until you turned into even more of a monster. Your wife loved you up until a point. Your girlfriend that you used and manipulated you loved you up until a point. And all those up until points was like when you became a monster and acted abusively towards them.
Yeah.
Like, love is unconditional, yes. But there is a condition, an unheard condition that is like, don't abuse me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that love should be conditional unless you're like a parent or something, honestly.
Agreed. Like, you know, don't slap me around and threaten to kill my horrible Pegasus.
Don't burn the entire city. Because that's actually the thing that, like, made Romeo be at the point of, I have no father. It wasn't even anything he did to him. It was, like, the point where Montague was just like, I'm going to burn down the entire city, and then I want to make it very clear that I'm going to burn your girlfriend next. I'm going to call her a whore when I do it.
Yeah, and I'm realizing, you know, maybe I should have not just watched these episodes once, you know, last month, and I should have watched them again today.
I watched them twice, once last night and once today.
I want to ask a very important question.
Yeah.
If Montague knew, if Papa Montague knew that if he killed all the Capulets, it would cause an apocalypse, would he still go with his plan knowingly? Or would he be like, all right, I'm just going to kill all the men and I'll keep the women in jails, I guess?
I'm not sure. I mean, like, it feels like finding out, like, Montague does seem to have some sort of weird religious belief in Aeschylus, and he does seem to genuinely break down when he finds out that Juliet is that Juliet's blood is a thing that's required to keep Aeschylus going.
I find it very weird that it's only the women of the Capulet family. It's probably some, like, you know, pure maiden kind of thing, I guess. I also have a bigger question. I should have asked it from the first episode reviewed. So Ophelia is going on of like, oh, Aeschylus used to be two trees, but now it's one. All that. Was there another god and it died? Like, kind of like a Romeo and Juliet situation, like the god was the star-crossed lover?
So the thing that we that I think at this point we can say is that Aeschylus is not the god. The goddess is the god, and Aeschylus is supposed to be a gift from her. And it's like implied that Montague's exist, that something to do with what Montague did killed the other tree. And that's the reason why everything is as bad as it is now.
Mm.
At least from what the old man was saying.
I do think, you know, the whole two trees, two lovers, it adds the duality of Romeo and Juliet, which seems to be a major theme.
Yeah. In this,
the whole is the duality.
Yeah, so Tybalt throws a dagger into the Montague crest. They cover the prince's body with his cloak. Romeo says, my father lived by the sword and died with nothing. He believed fear was more powerful than love, and that belief brought about his fall. Juliet says, it could be that he was simply too afraid to surrender to love, and so we sought to quell that fear with the sword. When Romeo asks why he would be afraid to give in to love, Juliet says, because when you love someone with all your heart, you cannot bear the sorrow that follows should you lose them. Romeo asks what's wrong, and we see her sad face as she thinks about how she won't be able to fulfill her promise to him. So the episode preview this time is done by Ophelia. In ancient verse, we praise the ruddy hair of she who quells the land, and dries our tears. Her own desire, the Fates refuse to spare, with sword to cross or quench a tyrant's fears. Unlike most episodes, the catchphrase of, is this truly a love that can never be, is not spoken, because they already know the answer.
And as do we. We love this anime.
Now, what were you saying, Coley?
I was going to say, and this time we don't hear, is this a love that can never be?
Yep. Because we know the because they both know the answer. So yeah. What do we think about the episode?
Very good.
Oh yeah, I think this is one of the strongest anime we've ever strongest episode we've seen. It's a strong anime overall, and I'm just glad to see where this has gone.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a very good dramatic death for Prince Capulet.
Oh, do you mean Prince Montague?
Yeah, Prince Montague.
Okay.
I think it was a good detail to have Tybalt be delaying his vengeance so that he could get him to the tree to save Juliet, because it shows that because it's important for his character development, because it shows that he's willing to willing to prioritize the people he cares about over his vengeance, which was the thing that he was unable to do beforehand, and the thing that Prince Montague was entirely incapable of doing, since he's come to the point in his life where he's entirely motivated by hate. I have quibbles about the level of sympathy that Romeo and Juliet show for him in his death, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I get that it's for thematic reasons, but
I mean, there's a certain point where you have to like look at the themes and say, yes, this is for thematic reasons, but do I agree with those themes? And I'm kind of starting to get to the point where I'm just like, maybe I don't agree with all of the themes of this show.
Yeah.
Like, guys, it's getting a little too much when this dude has... I understand you feel bad for him, and like, okay, thematically, like, you do want things to be built on good foundations and all that, but like, god damn, can't anybody just go, you know what, fuck him, he was an asshole, I feel bad, yada yada, he had a hard life, but like, he was an asshole.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, like, I have to say that if Juliet's intended punishment for him had been the thing, I do not think I would have been satisfied. And I think the show knows that, and that's why they have Mercutio kill him. And that's kind of one of those things where it's like, well, you're kind of having your cake and eating it too, show. Like, you're all like, oh yes, love, not hatred. But we cannot allow ourselves... we cannot allow ourselves to have even a moment where we kill our enemies. And it's just like, yeah, but you still killed him, though.
Basically, yeah.
I understand the theme. I disagree with the theme.
Yeah.
Like, the theme itself is very noble. Like, yeah, you should love everybody. And, like, you know, you should try and make things built off of, like, communication and agreement and negotiations versus just slaughtering each other, which, valid. But it doesn't take in kind of the real world consequences and like what happens when you allow dictators to live. Typically, the power vacuum that they have does not just magically go away.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of stories of dictators coming back to the country, to countries after they've fled from them. At the very least, the chances that Montague would have just quietly walked away from this and not tried to get his vengeance in some way, seem very low. I disagree with that part. I think that And like, it, and it's interesting too, because I do think that the idea that Prince Montague was afraid of love was like an important key to understanding his character. And it's good that somebody said it on screen, but at the same time, you can also just say fuck him.
Exactly. You can go, listen, I am sorry you have abandonment issues, but you were horribly abusive to a lot of people and destroyed thousands of lives. You need to die. Goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, do we have any other thoughts on the episode?
I don't think so.
I'm having the thought of, again, when I watched it, three weeks ago or whatever, you know, with how long the gap between recording new episodes has been, I can't remember. I should have watched it again.
Yeah.
Because of our re-recording.
Yeah.
Tech issues. But it's okay. They are fixed and we shouldn't have to re-record anything else. It should be fine now.
Cool.
I'm tentatively saying.
Alright, so before we get into that stuff, which is like housekeeping that we can probably discuss, but that like our listeners don't need to hear because they don't care. If they've gone to this point, all of the re-recordings that they will have heard, they have heard either way. So do we have any so what are people's predictions for these last two episodes?
Juliet's willingness to sacrifice herself, despite how much she loves Romeo, I think he's going to stop her last minute and they'll cry, and like Aeculus will be so moved and touched by the tears that Aeculus will just thrive without her sacrificing herself.
Yeah, I get the sense that Juliet's going to have to sacrifice herself to Aeschylus, and Romeo's going to commit suicide so he can be with Juliet in death. But it's Romeo and Juliet. They're both going to be dead by the end of this.
I dislike that. I think you're probably not wrong. I am dreading possible tragedy, considering the source material.
Either that, or Romeo dies, and Juliet, you know, in her despair, just decides to, you know, sacrifice herself to Aeschylus. You know, maybe Romeo gets murked. If Zeb didn't mention, oh yeah, Mercutio doesn't show up again, I would have said Mercutio as being the culprit behind Romeo's potential murder. Who knows? Maybe Jesus will kill Romeo.
Now, if only we're lucky.
Sorry, Romeo, but the Jesus is explicitly very anti-twink.
Romeo's not a twink.
I said he's a twink.
He's not a twink.
He's pretty muscular.
Is he an otter? Or does he not have enough hair to be an otter?
He's definitely not hairy enough to be an otter. Nobody in this show except maybe the one-biter is, like, even part of that whole diagram of, like, gay man.
Romeo is... he's got muscle. He's definitely not a twink. Benvolio's a twink. But, like... we can't even call him a himbo anymore because he's not dumb anymore.
Are we sure he's not dumb anymore?
We're not sure. That's fair.
If we're not sure, then he probably is still that dumb.
That's fair.
Like, he's realized that he needs to kill his father, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's, like, that smart otherwise.
He could be dumber.
He could be dumber.
He's definitely not a twink.
He's definitely not.
Anyway, do we have anything else to say about this, or...?
I think that we have one more thing to say about this.
Yeah?
This may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime is not. I'm Zeb Berryman, and this has been Anime's Journey to the West. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Anime's Journey TW, as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime is not.